Fire Board Commission meeting. Have a start time of 3 p.m. on Wednesday, April 16th. Let's have a roll call, please.
Commissioner Fowler?
Yes.
Here, ma'am.
Commissioner Hudson?
Present.
Commissioner Martin?
Here, ma'am.
Commissioner Leonard?
Here, ma'am.
Commissioner Clasby?
Here, ma'am.
Commissioner Morgan?
Yes, ma'am.
Commissioner Johnson?
Here, present. We will have invocation by Chief Wilson. Did I promote you?
This is an honor to give this invocation today. Hopefully, I do it as good as Chief Michael Walker. Let's bow our heads. Dear Lord, thank you for bringing us all here today for the Fire Board meeting. Guide us, help us make good decisions. I'd like to say a special prayer of everyone here that's for a promotion. And it's just an honor being here. In Jesus' name we pray. Amen. Amen.
To the flag of the United States of America, and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
All right. Well, we have proclamations and special presentations. A motion recognition, Chief LaShawn.
Yeah, good afternoon, Mr. Commissioner. Mr. Chair, Commissioners, want to recognize a few recent promotions that took place since our last meeting. Gentlemen, as I call your name, please come forward. Lieutenant Irel Gamez. Lieutenant Gamez has been with the district since 2009. He previously served in both the firefighter EMT and firefighter paramedic role prior to his promotion. He's currently filling officer vacancies on B shift, and as soon as Station 18 opens up in the coming weeks, he'll be reassigned. Lieutenant Stephen Cullen. Lieutenant Cullen has been with the district since 2016. Like Lieutenant Gamez, he also served in the EMT and paramedic roles prior to his promotion. He's also filling officer vacancies on his assigned shift, and he'll be reassigned once Station 18 opens up. Engineer Jason Miller. Engineer Miller served with the district since 2015, and he also held the roles of EMT and paramedic prior to his promotion. We have Engineer Kevin Riley. Engineer Riley also joined the district in 2018. He served as an EMT paramedic and also special operations technician before his promotion. And lastly, although unable to attend, we have Engineer Kevin Solomon. Engineer Solomon served with the district since 2012, and he previously served in the firefighter EMT role prior to his promotion. So if you guys, everyone can please join me congratulating these members on their well-deserved promotion. Take family pictures? Are you guys outside or inside, or how do you guys want to? The lieutenants, we do need to swear in the lieutenants. The district attorney needs to swear you two in. Oh, so right. If you, Jason, you come over here if you don't mind, and then Kim will swear you guys in.
Again, congratulations. All right, we'll now have a mid-year update for Chief Lagle.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chairman and board members. Vicky's fault. I'm here to give you an update with the mid-year project review. It's on. Guess I got to use my outside voice. moving through the budgeted projects and ongoing projects, stop me if you have any questions. I'm going to try to run through this quickly. Traffic preemption system, status of that is installations are ongoing. The progress is 100% complete on the fire district side for all of our frontline vehicles. County-owned intersections are also 100% installed and fully operational. City of Port St. Lucie just completed their first 22. They're working towards their other 150 plus intersections, one being another project that we're having over at Fire Station 20. And then the city is working towards securing funding for 50 plus intersections owned by the city. Fire Station 2 concrete and curb repairs. We've done that both at 2 and at Fire Station 17. The next slide. they're both 100% complete and included concrete apron, curb replacement, and repairs. It was pretty extensive in both stations. Fire Station 18. It is approximately 95% complete. Well, I was waiting. I was waiting.
But has the pool not been built yet?
So waiting on funding for the fountain.
And of course, it includes approximately 18,000 square foot two-story fire station with admin and laundry facilities, and also a gym and a medical clinic. Site upgrades include all of the above or below there: landscaping, utilities, stormwater, and our contractor is Jacqueline and Sons Construction. The logistics facility in the rear of the building, that addition is approximately 75% complete, and that included essentially doubling the size of our current logistics warehouse, loading zones, distribution, and inventory space. Remnant is our contractor on that. Station 20 is moving along very quickly, approximately 65% complete. Includes 11,800 square foot fire station, helipad, kitchen, admin, three bays, crew quarters, regional lift station, you name it, it's at that place. So, and Remnant is the contractor on that project. We should be pouring the exterior concrete in 2 days. So that's moving along quickly.
Mr. Chair, when do we expect that to be done? Because I'm going to Valencia K tomorrow morning and they're going to ask.
So the contracted date is October 25th.
Okay, thank you.
Mast arm signalization kind of goes hand in hand. It's a separate project approved through the board. It's for a signalized intersection. It includes traffic preemption, intersection traffic cameras, and it provides access for Fire Station 20, and then also the joint agreement with the city of PSL for the park across the street. And that's approximately 55% complete in construction. Fire Station 19, that project is approximately 60% site complete. So all of the infrastructure underground, utilities, hookups, natural gas, all of that is approximately 60% complete. We anticipate we should receive a building permit within the next 2 weeks from the county. So then the clock starts ticking. Remnant's the contractor on that one. Station 12, expansion. We are currently in for permitting with the city of PSL, and that includes an additional 720 square foot addition to get the bunker gear out of the truck room bay into a conditioned space out of the carcinogens, along with providing a fitness facility to get the gym equipment out of the sleeping quarters dorms at Station 12. There's a kind of antiquated older station. So Logistics South project, it's in the permitting phase as we speak to, and we call everything logistics, logistics south, logistics north. It's actually an addition on to the south side of the fleet building. It includes an additional 2,000 square foot bay. So it'll provide additional storage space. It'll provide optional space for personal protective equipment upgrades in the future if necessary. Fire Station 10 rebuild, 100% construction documents are completed. That was when we went through our transition phase with Remnant as being our CMAR into Jacqueline and Sons. Remnant's completed the 100% construction phase documents. That includes an additional two, essentially rebuilding Fire Station 10 next to Fire Station 10, so doubling it in size, 2.5 bays, living quarters, and it's currently with our construction manager at risk, Jacqueline and Sons, to provide us a GMP to include temporary housing of our crews when they construct that project. I anticipate having a GMP before the board June from Jacqueline and Sons. Fire training complex located out at Fire Station 9. So this goes kind of hand in hand with what Chief Krause and Chief Gonzalez presented to you and our concerns with the employees and applicants. And so we're in the land procurement and planning phase with the county to secure additional lands out at the Tacerta complex. And that would include 6,000 square foot training building, classrooms, offices, training spaces, and it would all, and the site itself would include everything to make us compliant with Florida state standards for fire training facility, a live burn trailer, training tower, and a confined space props. Logistics North facility is essentially a freestanding 14,000 square foot building that will be utilized as half logistics, half fleet. There's trucks parked all over the place, and we want to have some room for our trucks inside, protect them from the elements, while also providing some support areas for events that we hold here at the fire district. That's in the design and permitting site phase right now. We actually went before the city of Port St. Lucie for a variance and was granted that, so that project will be moving forward. Station 15 expansion project, land procurement in planning phase it's in. That's up next in the level of importance when it comes to projects within the county. So that's the number two project after Station 19 training complex. And that will include two additional bays, crew quarters, admin, bunker gear rooms, out of the truck room, of course, and a covered patio. Station 7 relocation, it's also in the land procurement and planning phase. The proposed site is 4554 Taylor Dairy Road, and we're in talks with the county to carve out 5 acres in the county's existing parcel that they own there, and it would provide us room and space to construct a 4-bay fire station with room for future growth. Questions?
Mr. Chair, can I just make one comment?
Yes.
So going back to the intersections, when I heard there was a little delay in getting things done and it had to do with funding, I do want everyone to know that I went to our city manager and said, this is a life safety issue, find the money. So just so everyone's aware. So we're moving forward.
Is that the way you do it?
Yes, that's what I do. Right, Steph?
Yep. I've done that too. So
that's what we do.
We'll
say,
see if it shows up.
Mr. City Manager, find it.
Yep. Yep.
And he finds it, right?
He finds it.
Yep. Scary, but he does.
Okay. All right, good afternoon, everybody, Mr. Chair, Commissioners. Thank you for your time. So I don't have as much large projects as Chief Lingle does, so but we're definitely busy as it is, so happy to share it with you. Actually, before we get started, in effort to keep it short, I left out some of the divisions, but I'll provide a quick update on that. Communications, we're onboarding 3 people right now. There have been issues previously with the county and issues with the CAD system, and they work very hard to get through those, and they just do an amazing job. I'm so proud of them. It's Telecommunicator Appreciation Week, so they were recognized. They've got personalized hoodies, so it stays pretty cold in there, so they were happy about that, but they're just doing a great job. In terms of logistics, same thing, just amazing people. They're working under difficult circumstances, the construction, the dust, paint, the loud noises, coming in on the weekends to get things moved out and to get things running. It's without an interruption to what we do, so they get the mission done. The supervisor's military man, and the mission's going to get complete, so they're doing a great job there. In terms of our annual preventative maintenance for our medical equipment and equipment on the trucks is complete. In terms of grants, we got notice that we're getting some money in now for the exercise equipment from the previous AFG, and we're just waiting for reimbursement for Milton, which is a significant amount. State of Florida is not releasing it. It's not uncommon, so we're just waiting on that to come in. And we've already submitted for some other grants as well for radios, which is going to be a need in the future, and everything keeps going up. All right, so community risk reduction, they're doing an amazing job. We've got the fire marshal here in the back. He impressed me before, but what he's been able to accomplish with Chief Krause with the new software program that they are developing and implementing is just unbelievable how quickly they're moving. They're doing a great job. So in terms of public education, Stacy is absolutely killing it right now. She's got roughly 92 events she's completed with the school, the tours, fire extinguisher training, just basic fire prevention stuff. It's she's doing a great job. The division itself, 4,000 inspections. Should be just over 4,000 right now with events, permitting, occupancies. They've brought in about $1.6 million to date for the fiscal year. And for the software itself, during the build-out, they have completed the inspections, permitting, and the invoicing. Those are in use right now. They're also, for the pre-planning, they're finishing that up. There's an officer meeting. We're going to introduce it to the officers as well. So now the crews will be working with community risk reduction as well in terms of these pre-planning incidents. So that's going to be a big advantage and an advancement for the division. Community Connect is an amazing feature. Citizens will be able to put in the information that they want us to see. Right now they have to email the county, give permission, they put it in the CAD notes. Now they control the information very easily, and the software company will allow us to advertise it, and they're going to assist with getting the word out. So medications, locations, pets, whatever they want to put in there, they have full control over that, so we're excited about that. The investigations module should be completed by the end of the year, and the vendor portal is going to be another advancement where contractors will create an account, and they'll be able to see where they are at in the process of their permits and things of that nature. So it's really a significant achievement for the CRR division. Talking about restructuring now, because we're so busy, considering the groundwork for an administrative and a field operations subdivisions for the most part. So if you want these slides, I'll have them sent to you, but I'm not going to break it out completely. But we're at that point now where we're big enough to where we need to think about expanding responsibilities. Building and grounds, again, they're doing very well as in terms of their projects. So we've got just some station improvements, significant improvements that they're getting in for the station. So on the north end, we got wainscoting completed. One of the bigger projects, the interior light replacement, the LED. We've had water issues with the fluorescent. So with the water and the electricity, we're much more efficient, less lights. It's definitely an upgrade for the stations. The bay door strip lighting. So in an effort to help firefighters know when to drive out of the station, we've put these strip lights there so they know when the door is fully up, and that should help prevent some of the issues we've had in the past with bay doors getting hit. So the entire south end is completed. AC duct replacement was good. We had issues with older stations, mildew, mold, things like that. So those stations are more efficient. And then just larger projects are listed in the slides as well. You'll be able to look through. In terms of kitchen remodels, we've got two stations taking place right now, and we're going to be, depending the outcome of those, we're going to be moving straight ahead and knocking out the four other stations, hopefully by the end of this fiscal year. Fleet, the fun one, the expensive one. To date, we've got about $9 million outstanding. This year, we expect five engines, a squad engine, and a Quint. Quint, I believe, is going to station 20. It's going to be close whether we actually have it when the station opens or not, but it should be right around the same time. That's fully funded this fiscal year. Fiscal year 26, we're expecting six rescues and then two of the remounts. Saves us about $100,000 per truck, and it's quicker when we do a remount, and those are some of the cost-saving initiatives we're trying to put out there. Fiscal year 27, we've got two more engines, and then a refurbished Quint, which we're excited about. Quints are going for about $1.5 million. We got $680,000 to do basically top to bottom refurb on it. And Delray had theirs done, and it looked great. I don't think that was the one that was hit by Brightline. And so we're hoping that it comes out as good. They've also completed, as Chief Ling alluded to, glance installation. We have fleets coming in for admin and the line. We've got Rescue 18, 19, and 20 fully outfitted. So even though the stations aren't ready, they are out in the line and they're in service. If staffing allows, it helps reduce the workload and helps with our response time, so we're excited about that. Some of the larger repairs you'll see here, as the apparatus get older, more miles, those are more expensive. But overall, we budget for it. We're within our budget right now, so those are staying contained. IT, some really big developments in terms of cybersecurity and efficiency, things that we've been working for as well. We've got Verizon Connect established for some vehicles so we can monitor movements for efficiency. Windows 11 upgrade's been taking place. That comes with enhanced security. 365 is up. The iPads have been given to the stations and the rescue trucks. And what's great is they have all the apps that we would use, such as if we have a pediatric patient, the app is right there. It tells us what to use, what size. So it's really a great tool to have. Utilizing software to push out updates. Previously, one person would have to update computers individually. Now, you can hit them all up at once. So that will help with our servers, mobile applications, and the PC applications. And as you can see, there's quite a few. They've been working with Chief Langle to get the stations and logistics up to speed. In terms of all this new software, I mean, with all this building going on, never seen it before, and now with the software, we've got significant software upgrades, and we're just working through them, and IT has to work with all of them. So you got the CRR's new one, new patient care writing report. We're revamping our website. The big ERP, that's we're doing that right now, and now we're looking at a new scheduler. But the features, once this gets rolled out, all of us are learning. We're excited about it, and I think it's really going to improve efficiency and give us capabilities that we don't currently have right now. And I believe Tim is exceptionally excited about a new ERP.
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
So I know we're doing all this with technology. Are we doing anything to move toward any AI technology?
Well, we're essentially using AI right now for just about everything in terms of bringing into this. Some of the PCRs have AI capabilities built into it, as well as I believe Tyler has some also functions as well. But the software that we have for CRR and the other have that built into it.
Okay.
So it is going to be used. In terms of all the software stuff, they're installing mobile radios in all the trucks. The new trucks, they were able to do an update. Instead of spending $14,000 we were quoted, they bought the equipment for under $1,000. The county gave us the software, and we were able to do it ourselves. And by we, them. All right, so now the SD-WAN that we implemented about a year and a half ago is fully up and running. We've had 48 disruptions, never lost connection, never affected our operations. This was a huge upgrade, and it definitely we're seeing the fruits of that labor. I mean, we're probably over 150 times since it's been implemented that we have been ready to respond with no adverse effects. So That's working really well. Other things that they're doing is working with the county for the new zones and alias for 18, 19, and 20. We have to map those out, designate them, and go through that process. So Mitch has been working with the county on that. And lastly, we purchased managed switches last year, sometimes referred to as smart switches, but these have a little more capabilities. Once they were programmed, we got them all installed at the stations, significant cybersecurity upgrade and efficiency, redundancy, resiliency. We're in a much better position. It controls all the traffic coming in, but it isolates where the information's going to. So if one area is compromised, it doesn't compromise the whole system. There's no access to other systems. And what it also monitors radio traffic or network traffic. So it'll identify and reroute the traffic to the capabilities to the most critical areas instantaneously. It also allows us to run reports, see when peak times are, and identify issues before they occur. It also gives IT the ability to access the area of concern remotely and fix it as well without having to report to the station and locate it. So all those were programmed and they've been installed. So that's definitely, again, something else. So I've never, not that I've been here as long as some people over there, but it's just to be so busy with all the new stations, all the new software, and it's just exciting to see everybody. It's stressful, but everyone's coming together. We're all working with each other, and very, very proud of just administration and the support. They're doing a great job.
Your budget review by Mr. Bergeron, our treasurer.
The money.
Money.
There's never enough.
Excuse me, I'll be pulling that up regarding the ERP update.
We may have to come to the microphone. To the microphone. Thank you.
Good afternoon.
There we go. Better?
Better.
Yes. Good afternoon, everyone. Thank you. The Tyler technology upgrade for the ERP system is off and running. Last week I'm participating in every training session. I'm really going to be hands-on with this whole process. Last week I had 3 8-hour sessions. Tomorrow I have 1 8-hour session. And the go-live date on the first phase, which is finance, purchasing the non-payroll HR functions, is April 1 of 2026. The phase two HR payroll piece is supposed to kick off October, November of this year with a 12-month projected implementation plan. So that would be October 1st of 2026 for that phase. So really looking forward to getting through that. It's going to be a lot of work, but in the end, I think it'll be collectively, I think we'll be very happy with the end product. So today I have a mid-year budget review. We hit our sixth period, so we're halfway through the 24-25 budget year, fiscal year, and we are starting to ramp up for 25-26 budget development. We've scheduled station meetings for the next few weeks. We're going to go visit every station, scheduled a kickoff meeting for department budgets, department managers, early May. So that's, you know, already ramping up with 6 months to go before we start the new year. At a very high level, the 24-25 is looking good. Our revenues are trending above budget, and expenditures/appropriations are trending below budget, and this presentation will highlight some of those. And I will need my glasses for that. So the first slide, and I'll walk you through the approach that I've taken to project out through the balance of the current year through September 30th. So the first slide is property taxes, and at the top we have current budget, and with property taxes we budget at 96%, so there's a 4% reduction, and so the net budget is that $116 million figure. So then I went back and I looked at last fiscal year, periods 1 through period 6, since that's what we have actual data for in the current year, and then I compared that figure, the 96 million, to the amount that we collected in the remaining six periods, the remaining 6.7 million. So we collected last year a total of $102.8 million. And the factor for the last 6 months compared to the first 6 months is at 1.0701. So I looked at the current year, periods one through period six, and I applied that same factor to get an estimate through September 30th of the current year of 116,026,017. And when I compare that to budget, there's a shortfall of 493,000. I don't think we're gonna see a shortfall in property taxes. I suspect it's a timing difference. You know, just one deposit coming in a little bit off period six versus period seven. Tax collections are usually extremely stable. My experience is right around 96.3%. So that is not a concern. Same approach then was taken with ambulance billing. And the projected estimate for the current year using the exact same procedure, same process, is $13,173,902, which would put us in $1.173 million above budget. Good news. Questions so far? Pretty straightforward. And I did look back also. I went back to 22-23 and I back tested the same approach, and the final year-end results in 23-24 were very much in line with that same, you know, factoring, if that makes sense.
You want to advance the slide?
Oh, I'm sorry. Oh, thanks. I can't see that. Okay, the next one after ambulance billing is, there are hard copies up there. I know it's kind of small to read. If anybody in the audience needs one, I can give you a card and I'll email it to you. Trying to save paper. The next revenue analysis is impact fees. And impact fees, and this has always been my practice too, budget low, because you never know what's going to happen with impact fees. You don't want to overcommit to projects and then realize suddenly, hey, the economy tanked, building is not happening, we don't have the impact fees to support the project. So conservative budgeting and construction type revenue projects is very prudent. So doing the same extrapolation process, projected impact fee collections through September 30th of 25 would be $3,187,408, which is $2.4 million above budget. So good thing.
That's good, because we're going to need it.
Well, yeah, with inflation on, you know, the things that we're having to buy with impact fees, that's a longer-term concern. The next slide, do you have the clicker? Oh, okay, thank you. investment returns, you know, similar conservative budgeting. And, I've already said this, sorry, but revenues, you always want to go low. You come in above, and the opposite is what we should do with expenditures and appropriations. So investment returns, budget $1,691,000. Extrapolating out through September 30th, 2025, we'd get $4,952,000. So we'd come in at about $3.3 million above budget. Another good development. Mm-hmm. And then we looked at major appropriations, and by major, I mean salaries and fringe benefits. This slide, everything is rolled up. I mean, there's a ton of detail underneath these figures, but major object 5221 is salaries. That's row one. Row two is benefits 5222. So same approach. It's a little bit different format because there's more information here. But column C shows the factor from the full 12 years versus the first six periods. And so for salaries, it was 2.09 for the last 6 months and 1.28 for benefits. So on the next slide, I repeated that the factors just so you can see them there. I applied those to column E to create column H, the extrapolated expense. And there's some other information in here to allow calculation of estimated balances at September 30th. Again, a little bit different than revenues, but the same logic. And if we apply those factors to the first six periods of 24-25 through September 30th, we will expend $63.3 million in salaries. That's column H, row one. Benefits $37.9 million, column H, row two. And for salaries, that would be $6.4 million below budget. And for benefits, $2.9 million below budget. Now, a lot of factors play into salary budget variances. Mm-hmm. Are we fully staffed? When are we hiring staff for the new stations? What was it budgeted at? Those types of things. Certainly rather be in this positive variance situation, though. And we'll continue to monitor this every month. And the closer we get to September 30th, the 12th period, the more accurate it becomes. That was it.
All right, got a lot of numbers here. All right.
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
I have a question. Somebody actually called my office today and was asking how Amendment 5, that's the inflation indexed homestead exemption change that passed last year, how or if that will impact our budgets moving forward.
I saw some numbers months ago. I don't recall what they were. Really, we're just sitting tight, waiting until we hear from the property appraiser. I can look and see what I have and and circulate that for
just
you guys.
Since municipalities and counties, whatever, could raise their millage rate to adjust for that, we clearly can. So, interested to see how that works out.
Yeah, I don't want to throw something out off the cuff, so I'll look forward and share it with you.
Okay, thank you.
Any other questions?
No.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Maybe I do have one question.
Not so fast.
So, and this kind of came up at another meeting today. You've looked at all these numbers, right? And so we're counting on you as our fiscal expert here. Any recommendations or things that you see that we should really pay attention to, or things that you're monitoring that could maybe flare up and kind of anticipating some things, or even what you may have heard?
Really haven't heard anything concerning. I mean, everybody's talking about what's going on in Washington, and is that going to affect flow through to the state level, and does that affect anything for us? I haven't heard any concerns about direct impact. We like our returns on investment right now, and so hopefully we keep generating those returns, but kind of too soon to tell.
You're our fiscal expert from my perspective, and so we hope that if there are things that you're hearing or feeling that we should maybe focus in on, I think we'd appreciate a little sooner than later.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, I lived through the Great Recession, and we saw things coming in 8-9 months prior, and we're really planning ahead for that. So you just have to have the right tea leaves.
Right, we're all bracing for what we may anticipate, right? And so we don't know how that's going to impact. We've got goods that we ordered. I hope those prices are locked in. And those things don't begin to fluctuate, but that concerns me for, we're all speculating now as things change daily, literally.
Hourly,
mm-hmm. Right? And so those are the types of things that concern me as I hear the news like everybody else, and I'm often wonder.
As part of the budget development process, we are working on a more of a capital-focused long-range plan, a 5-year plan, and so we will be building in inflationary factors into that.
Great.
How accurate are they going to be? Who knows, but you'll be seeing that in the next month or two.
Yeah. Just last question. With the efficiency studies going on nationally and statewide, does that come into our purview at all when it comes to that, in the auspices from the governor's perspective, anybody, when it comes to efficiencies? Do you think it'll reach this far down? They're looking at cities and counties. I'm just curious, and have we thought about it?
Yeah, it's something I think about all the time, because special districts are often a target of.
Yes.
So we constantly monitor them, but
okay.
I don't see anything right now on the horizon of what we know as a legislation.
As a preparation, and the fiscal expert, I would hope that we are doing our own self-evaluation when it comes to efficiency. Mm-hmm. And again, I would hope that I'm relying on you, sir, and to bring those to our attention for a discussion. I think we need to be aware. We don't want to be blindsided. And I think that that's something that the public may try to utilize as well. We always hear around budget timing and operations. They don't understand what we see and have to deal with. Mm-hmm. And so it's a concern of mine early, and I don't want that utilized during this budget cycle that's coming up with everything that's in the vortex nationally and statewide.
Might be too much in the weeds, but I can share, you know, one example right now. We had our tax deposits going from the tax collector into the Seacoast local bank account, the checking account. And so then someone would have to wire it from there into our investment pool, because we're getting a heck of a lot better return in the investment pool. And so if a deposit went in on a Friday, we might not get a return on that investment until Monday. So we recently switched all of those deposits to go straight into the pool. And so we're maximizing the return on those investments. Took some steps out, made it more efficient, but it will absolutely generate more income for the fire district.
Board, any comments?
No, you make a good point. But I think what a lot of the public doesn't understand is that our budgets have to balance every year. And also we have to go through audits every single year. And so when things come out on audits that are questionable, then that, you know, puts up a little bit of red flags, but we haven't had that issue. They can come in and do whatever they want to do, but we have to still have reporting requirements to the state, and the citizens don't understand that we're looked at already.
Yeah,
at the local level, mm-hmm. more so than anyone. So they do what they want up there, but everything comes down on us as unfunded mandates and all the regulation and all the reporting requirements. So,
Mr. Chairman,
yes.
So the two previous presentations were about all the things that we're doing and going to do. And maybe I should have asked them, but are all of those paid for or going to be paid for?
They're in the current budget if the contracts are already issued.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not sure. Well, we had some that are farther out years, 26,
right.
27.
Right.
And so we're doing an annual budget, you know, currently.
Right.
They will be in the long-range plan, though, which you'll see. But a project that's 2 years out would not be.
No. But we project that we can pay for them.
That's what the long-range plan will show. That's what the long-range plan is specifically for multi-year projects.
Right. Okay. Thank you.
Yeah, we're in very good communication.
Yeah. Good.
All right. See no other questions? We'll proceed.
Thank you.
Do we have any accommodations?
We have several accommodations. There is one I want to bring to light. It's a telecommunicator week, and so we did have one of our paramedics reach out and give accommodation to an entire crew out at communications. And basically, it was a full arrest call, and the call taker spoke with a wife, and basically walked the wife through CPR over the phone.
Wow.
Our crews got on scene, continued treatment, and they actually congratulated the whole crew out of communication at the time. But and the patient did receive ROSC, which is return spontaneous circulation. I'm at the hospital. I don't know the prognosis today, but they did return circulation when they got to the hospital. So he just wanted to reach out, and since it's telecommunicator, we don't want to point that one out.
Great, thank you.
Good.
All right, the combination.
Good news.
Congratulations to communication department. Let's give them a round of applause. All right, approval of fire board meeting minutes.
Move approval.
Second.
Move and proper second to accept the fire board meeting minutes for March 19, 2025. All in favor, indicate by saying aye.
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 Motion passes. We addition deletions agenda.
Yes. Thank you. I'd like to add under number 14, new business,
yes.
Our regularly scheduled board meeting for May 21st at 3 o'clock. We're proposing to change the time of that to 1 o'clock so that we can coordinate with the grand opening of our station next door. So just pursuant to the bylaws, that does require a majority vote by the fire board to change the meeting date or time.
So, board, let's have a motion to add that to agenda under 14. I guess it would be 14I. New business.
Change of
meeting time. Have a
move approval.
Second.
Move approval that we will add that under new business for start time. All in favor, indicate by saying aye.
Aye.
Okay. Motion passes. Approval of consent agenda.
Move approval.
Second.
Move and proper second to approve the consent agenda. All in favor, indicate by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Okay, motion passes. Public comments. Anyone wishing to comment to the fire board? Is there movement? Okay. Yes, if you come in, come on.
Please come on.
Okay.
His union. Ryan's union.
Right.
He's next.
Next up, the Compass Reunion Rep.
Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. Hope I find you all well.
Yep.
I know we're loud as it is, so. But we're still currently under our contract, as we spoke last time. It goes until October of next year. I did see some people from the county got a chance to go the last couple of months to Tallahassee. I was fortunate to go up there with the FPF also and meet multiple representatives. There's some unique things that the FPF is working on with FRS plans and trying to stay competitive, you know, locally against those FRS plans because, as you know, we're private retirement. So just taking some things into consideration moving forward when we come into negotiation next year. Besides that, all is well. We're working collectively together with administration and yourselves, and appreciate your all's time. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
All right. I'll take the public hearings. All right, we're going to move on to our new business item, or unfinished business. I don't think that is. New business item is 14I. We have a change of our meeting time.
Motion to change the regular meeting time scheduled for May 21st at 3 o'clock to 1 o'clock p.m. on May 21st.
So moved.
So moved. Second.
Then moved and proper second that we to change our meeting time for our next fire board from 3 p.m. to 1 p.m. here. All in favor of that motion, please indicate by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion passes. Thank you. Now, fire board resolutions. Resolution number 775-25, electric vehicle charging station safety requirements.
Good afternoon, board members. I don't want to read this entire resolution, but I do want to discuss it with you. It's quite lengthy. You know, the benchmark of a community risk reduction program is the three E's: education, enforcement, and engineering. You saw the number of inspections we do that's going out enforcing the existing code, all of the public education events, getting out there and trying to prevent these from happening before. Engineering, in this case, is looking at the current building codes, seeing if there's ways we can improve those to reduce risks to the community. We know that electric vehicle fires take a lot of water. They're difficult in normal conditions, and when you put them into a parking garage, they get much more difficult. Our units don't fit in there. Some of the techniques that we use are pretty difficult. Coming up in future fire code, there is already a push at the State Fire Marshal's office to adopt the new code in 2027, which will already require this. Which is that all commercial parking structures are sprinklered. Right now, that isn't adopted. So when a new parking garage goes up, you know, there's a risk there. And so some of the new parking garages that have been proposed have had electric vehicle charging stations in the parking garage. So what this resolution does is just gets on that a little early. We're going to go ahead and adopt that, if you pass it, adopt that code change to where that all parking structures have to be sprinklered. So from there, it's already going to go into effect in 2027. Again, the State Fire Marshal's Office is going in that direction, supporting that as well. In addition, one of the challenges we have in these parking garages is getting close to these vehicles. They burn very hot. Mm-hmm. One of the techniques that is out there right now is electric vehicle blankets. They're used to cover it. They're very heavy. So us getting in there, this resolution would also require them to maintain one of those in a secure box close to those electric vehicle charging stations within the structure. And the idea is that the sprinkler will knock that fire down initially. We can cover it, and we'll actually have to drag these vehicles out of these parking structures in order to completely reduce that risk. So without those sprinklers, we have our men and women out there trying to get water in these buildings and trying to get them covered up and bringing up 200-pound tarps. This is kind of where it's been going. Many other municipalities, Palm Beach County, they have this already in place. So moving forward, that engineering side, we're looking to be a little bit more safe and reduce risk through resolution. So this is one of the first ones we wanted to put before you. So a resolution of St. Lucie County Fire District establishing a fire sprinkler and safety requirement for electric vehicle charging stations, providing for applicability, enforcement, and penalties, providing for severability, providing for effective date. This resolution shall take effect immediately upon adoption, duly passed and adopted by the Board of Commissioners of the St. Lucie County Fire District the 16th day of April 2025. If you have any questions, I'd be available to answer them for you.
I have a question.
Without a man,
So this is countywide in any new structure?
New structures, not existing.
Not existing.
So just new coming in.
So if you have an existing one like we do in our garage?
No changes.
Right, but you're bringing up a safety concern.
So what we have in our possession is these electric vehicle blankets. In a building where they weren't already secured and stored there, we do have them in our F-150 pickup trucks. We can get them close enough to deploy them. There are means to be able to attack these fires, but the sprinkler is the safest way. It also protects your parking garage in that it's going to prevent these from spreading so rapidly. In this resolution, the entire building must be sprinklered, but where there are charging stations, it's going to be treated as an extra hazard area, which means the sprinkler heads are larger and they put out more water. We know that we need to get these knocked down. The difference in the size pipe from a regular sprinkler to the extra hazard is minimal. We've already talked to St. Lucie Medical and Lawnwood Regional about their parking garages. We've had good participation with them. They, in fact, moved their electric vehicle charging stations out of those plans. So this is just about engineering. Local ordinance is a way that we have to get ahead of this technology. The county's growing. There's new buildings that we haven't really dealt with before. We'd like to make sure that those buildings don't get built, because once they are, we can't ask people to go back and incur that cost. So we'd rather, before these start big parking garages go up, get this in place.
So how are you going to communicate this to our city?
So once this is adopted, it'll be a part of our local ordinance, and so it'll be a local amendment. And anytime they put in for plan review, they receive the our local amendments that they have to meet.
Okay.
So through the plan review process.
Okay. Thank you.
So we're fortunate that Captain Kozak is on a state task force to deal with these electric vehicles. What we put in the resolution is that they have to be approved by the AHJ, and we're going to have a list of blankets that meet our requirements so that they can. Some of them can even do an Amazon van. But again, it's the size, getting it close, and being able to secure it. These are just unique structures. Spain lost two firefighters the other day to electric vehicle fire in a parking garage. There's just the air. There's all sorts of things that go on there. So the sprinklers really put us in a position to protect the community and our firefighters.
And again, the fire blanket requirement, you can't put a condition on an existing charger, or can you? Is this only for future ones?
So the concept here is that we have them, and fire is our response. So out in the open area, we have the ability to get these close, and so that we have these existing. Those will be used to treat those buildings that are already in place. But for new structures, it's just to save that much more time in order to have them there close by.
And the idea of the blanket being on site, is it accessible to, like, civilian? Like, hey, that car's on fire, I'm going to throw the blanket on it.
So they weigh about 200 pounds. It takes quite a bit to deploy them, and they're about $1,200 to $1,500 currently. So what they will be is in a cabinet with a Knox box lock on it, so it'll be accessible to us.
Wow.
So I'm glad we're getting ahead of this. This is really great, especially since in this, our City Hall campus, we're planning a parking garage because we have no more room. People can't even park when they come into our campus. So this is good for us to know and to relate to our city manager and staff, because I guess we shouldn't be planning on any electric vehicle charging stations in the parking garage, because I can only imagine what the sprinkler system will cost in a parking garage. It's got to be, So
that is the goal with the county.
Luckily, we have some outside already.
There are new structures that are being built that we haven't had to experience before. You know, 2 million square foot warehouses, different things.
Yeah.
So there are things that we have to, and that's the goal of this. In terms of the software for efficiency, we're reducing those number of programs, putting them in together in CRR, so that was actually a cost savings. The software was a cost savings. Sometimes we have up to 11 or 12 softwares we interact with. This will bring it down into the low single digits that helps out.
Yeah, it's much cheaper just to install them outside in open air. Yeah.
Mr. Chair, thank you. So it's my understanding that the Florida Building Code, up to 48,000 square feet for parking garage structure, is not required a sprinkler system. And if that sprinkler, now we have a charging station inside that, this mandate then requires them to have sprinkler systems on regardless. And this supersedes the Florida Building Code. That'd probably be a question for the fire marshal. As a local ordinance. Sorry, you got the code guy sitting up here. Yeah. I'm sorry.
And be more restrictive.
Yeah. It's which edition that we're at right now.
Good afternoon, Cap Malzondo. As you're aware, Florida Building Code is going to be kind of treated separately. So yes, if this the parking structure would not meet the requirements of the Florida Building Code, then when it came to fire, our local amendment to the Florida Fire Prevention Code would require the
gotcha. Sprinkler system. And so if the parking garages does not require a sprinkler system and the electronic charging stations are outside that parking garage structure, does this affect that? Because it says outside.
So, and that's a great question, and I'm glad you're asking it, because one of the things that I think we could get lost in is focusing on the electric vehicle charging stations. But the intent is for any new parking structure to be sprinklered. So reason being is, yes, you have electric vehicles that are connected to charging stations, but you also have how many electric vehicles that you may be found, that may be found throughout a parking garage in regular parking spaces. Wow. So the additional water that would be available for those Teslas that might be parked within any floor of a parking garage is really one of the main benefits to wanting to add to our local amendment.
And also, I do want to point out that an NFPA 13, 2022 edition, this mm-hmm. is already in place. Florida hasn't updated to 2022 yet.
That'll be adopted in 26, I believe.
Yes. So that's we're simply about a year ahead mm-hmm. of what's already going to be in place.
So that was the question I was getting to, because at one point I thought I heard you say it was going to be sprinkler just at the charging stations, but there are people that come and go.
Yeah, that's what you're saying.
There. And yeah. So now it has to be.
Not allowed.
My concern also, going back to the mayor, Mayor Hudson's comment initially, I know two structures we have, one at Port St. Lucie, one at our City Hall. Have we done an inspection? I'm just curious as to how we would deal with that. I mean, we need to probably, for those city and county structures that we have, I'd like
so,
to.
So we've already gone out to all of the parking garages. We've evaluated them for vehicle access. We already have pre-plans in place, which is part of what the new software will do, is that our units will be able to see pre-plans within their map. They don't have to wait for the county. They don't have to download anything. It's overlaid right over what they're responding to. Okay. So all of those have been evaluated. We look at those regularly. That's a plan that we already have in place.
Perfect.
This is just making it a much safer plan.
Mr. Chair.
Yes, ma'am.
Wow. Regarding the EVs, and brought up a great point that so if the charging station's not in there, you don't have to do the sprinklers, but however you need to, because an EV can park anywhere.
No, so the entire structure has to be sprinklered. If there are electric charging stations within that parking structure, they have a higher sprinkler rating over those areas.
So just any
where the charging
future
station is.
Parking any future garage has to have
sprinklers.
So could we not just put a sign outside of the parking garage, no EVs allowed?
Yeah, that's what I'm thinking. You're talking millions of dollars.
I know.
Millions.
This ain't. Plus, they get free charging stations at governmental areas, but they don't pay for my gas, so why are we paying? Never mind.
How do you police that, though?
I'll stop. But you know how I am about EVs.
Well, I know.
We discussed this year at the transportation, and trust me, it's legislation coming forth, so more unfunded mandates, but I think we have to think from a public safety perspective, right? And I was having a conversation with Chief Lee, and these things burn hotter.
Yeah, they do.
They burn faster.
Longer.
We've seen actual concrete structures, I think, collapse as a result of the intensity of this fire. So think about the replacement of that as well. Mm-hmm. So this is just evolution. It's just things that we another reason I want to say this, for us to continue to push to meet together, because as city counties, we're faced with this, and we're going to have to communicate this to the public, because it's now going to cost even more to build stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So we did look at other counties and what they've done, those especially that are cities that have similar type buildings. Again, they've adopted this, and I want to, when we talk to HCA, about the requirement. They seem supportive of it.
They were, and the reality is that it was more supportive in the fact of pulling the EV chargers out because they've already gone through the permit process.
Sure.
So they're looking at, well, how can we address any situation that we have right now with this building that's already been permitted? So their solution was, okay, we'll alleviate some concern by pulling the charging stations out.
But they still have to put in sprinklers in that garage.
They've that would be one that the permit's already been issued. So to be able to go back to these projects that have already been budgeted for and through the permitting process would be obviously.
So in that, Mr. Chair, that raises a great question. When is this affected? This is affected as of today?
Yep.
It would be effective as of
as of today. So anybody that has applied for a permit for a parking garage structure up until 4 o'clock today, or applied for or granted?
They apply under the code.
Applied. Typically it's applied mm-hmm. for. That's okay. The attorney always asks, that's okay. Mm-hmm. Formality. So if I come in tomorrow morning with a permit for a parking garage, you're then going to look at me and go, you got to put sprinklers in there.
Yes, sir. This would be added to the local amendment to our code.
Now, I understand NFP, obviously, is going to be adopted in 2026. So this covers up until 2026, but it's...
This is a year early.
This is a year early.
Only because we have some of these parking structures coming in.
Sure.
And once they're built, mm-hmm. you know, they're basically for the next 10 to 20 years.
Yeah.
We don't know what's going to come with vehicle technology. We don't know what's around the corner from that.
Well, Mayor Martin, it looks like you're going to have to update your plans for your parking garage.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah, we've got a major project now.
Yeah. Yeah, and so this is an obvious thing, but I just want to make sure I understand it. If it weren't for these EVs, you wouldn't be talking about
Not necessarily.
Oh, that's what I wanted to know. Okay.
So anytime that you have these vehicles packed in very close together and there's limited access to them, they can take off. It damages the building substantially mm-hmm. once you get those going. The EV vehicles do make it worse. When you talk about burning hotter, some of them burn above 2,200 degrees. And when that happens, the initial amount of water that hits, that doesn't turn to steam. It splits apart into hydrogen gas and oxygen, which is flammable, right? These are hot burning. They need a lot of water. So, again, there is going to be a cost increase, but we don't know what technology is coming 10, 15 years. Once the structure is up, it's under that code. And then we have limited access to protect the public from that and or the firefighters. So,
well, that was my point. You were going to be asking for this anyway, regardless of EVs?
It would come from the state anyway. Next year.
Or whoever.
Yes.
Yeah. We were moving toward this anyway.
Yes.
Is my point.
Yes.
So we can't stick our head in the sand. I know. It's a true point. But your question, when we vote on this today, it goes in action tomorrow morning.
Okay.
On institutions that have not been permitted or submitted for that.
Okay.
It's not ready for permitting.
Okay, bold questions. We all understand the gravity of this. I know we do with our pendant project downtown.
Mr. Chair, there's no doubt in my mind, whenever a fire happens in a parking garage and our vehicles are in there, we are thankful that there are sprinkler systems in there to save and protect our vehicles and those that are around there and the fire. But please understand our...
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
We have to talk this through.
Absolutely.
And every municipality has mm-hmm. dealt with this. They've looked at it. And the systems that we're talking about, we're going to try to make them as simplified as possible. Make sure that they fall within those guidelines. We were going to be there in a year anyway, but it is, as we face new buildings, once they're in. And from that aspect, we don't know what's around the corner.
And Mr. Chair, as you know, the building that's happening in this area and around surrounding areas, you're going to be putting parking garages up left and right.
It's insane.
So, Mr. Chair, okay, go ahead.
Just, you know, talking about cost here, because I think that's a big component. What's the normal number we talk about per parking space in an unsprinkled garage? Like $25,000 per space? Is that accurate? Is that what we're talking about?
I don't know.
Yeah, I would say that's pretty accurate.
Bump that up $5,000 a space. I mean, pretty significant, I'm sure.
Always.
Well, the sprinkler guy's going to be really good. You know, you're going to open up the sprinkler business.
The follow-up's going to be, what's the price of life and all the property?
Of course.
So generally, these buildings already have standpipes in them. And so those are what we connect our hoses to.
Right, that's
what yeah.
So generally they have that in a water supply, so I don't think the cost like that's a total bit. There's already water supply there. There's those things there. As we're thinking, I mean,
yes,
for a big parking garage, a couple $100,000, but millions, I don't know if it would add that. It'd be a big parking garage. I don't know what size project you're planning.
Oh, boy.
So right now, you have connections in these garages. If you can drag a hose in.
Depending on when they were built and how they were set up.
Okay. Chief, you had a comment? You look like you were going to say something.
No, I was just going to reiterate that you know, fire trucks don't fit the parking garage, right?
Yes. Right.
So when you have a car fire on a third
right.
story,
yeah,
garage,
that's true.
Standby just
basically
right. Mm-hmm. A lot of manpower, a lot of moving equipment.
Not time.
So it's time, right? So when a fire is happening on the structures,
right.
Especially the higher up, the worse it is, obviously. But you lose, you know, car after car after car.
So it's
important.
That's an obscure question. I'm thinking, who's going to communicate this?
Yeah.
Because there needs to be a communication. But this is
going
to go sideways real quick in our community. I've got developers.
I don't think it's going to be a surprise for most of them. Like I said, they're already required to put, I think they're going to deal with it in other municipalities.
Yes. So most of your big developers, and in some cases, they're already getting, they know it's coming. So this isn't something that they've, particularly Palm Beach County area, those areas, they're all preparing for the change to it.
And I can appreciate that, but this is St. Lucie County, Fort Pierce, Port St. Lucie. Sometimes our information source is a little slower. We need a communication plan and be prepared for this because we've got developers now in the city of Fort Pierce. We're on the fringe with these guys, in my opinion. And I'm concerned, right? We already
Mr. Chair, if you would like, our community risk reduction division could reach out to any developers you think we need to reach out to them and
I would like that.
Get a list from each agency.
Can you just please email this over to the building department?
Yeah.
I'm going to be on the phone with Jesus the minute I walk out of here.
The next TCBA meeting is May 8th. I'd love for you guys to join me and help inform some of the contractors. Should we move forward with this here tonight?
Yes. That's a great idea for the TCBA.
This is what I mean by communication. Mm-hmm. We put it together, mm-hmm. the people we need to bring along.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. We're about to make a decision that they put us up here to make, and now it's going to impact, and I just want us to all be aware of what we're voting for here.
Yep.
We'll make ourselves available to any organization.
Yeah, we want your names and numbers.
Well, Mr. Chair, in all due respect, if we vote on this today with today's date, the optics on this look like we're shoving it down somebody's throat and they didn't have a chance to apply for a permit. There's no grace period. Now listen, whether that's right, wrong, or otherwise, that's on them, not us. That's my opinion.
Mr. Chair,
yes, sir.
Is there any, you know, would it be out of line to table this to the next month so you can go have that talk with some people? Let them know we're about to do this. That way it's not, hey, we passed this. You should know about it.
Obviously, that's at the discretion of the board in terms of when you want to enact this. Again, I think if someone comes in and puts a plan there in the meantime, then it's going to fall under that code. That's just the way it is. So that's the only thing to consider in that is that if we tell them and then everybody throws them in there, then
just a placeholder.
That it's a placeholder, and sometimes those things do get, and they're not going to be built, which is fine. It's at the discretion of the board for this. I understand that it is a cost implication. Even though we are going to go to it next year, it's still a cost right now.
But
are those communications.
But Mr. Chair, based on your comment, you are not giving the public that opportunity with today's date. You're just not.
Chief Lee.
Well, that was going to be my question. If you're thinking about tabling, I would prefer we don't table it. I would
Yes. That's what I would be prepared to do. I don't want to table it because if you go out and have a stakeholder meeting, the stakeholders might try to say they don't want it and then try to lobby and try to play games. And that's not what we're about, right? So, but I do agree that we should probably give yeah, amend the date, effective date. So.
Take a motion from this board. We can have conversation, comments on it.
Mr. Chairman, I make a motion with the amendment of the effective date, effective June 1, 2025.
Second.
Okay, so we move to proper second that we change the date of adoption to June 1, 2025. Any questions about the motion discussion?
I don't know. I see this going sideways that way too. Then I go back to the word of safety and the fires and going from car to car to car, or whether it's a EV or what. And I'm just wondering now what's going to happen. All of these plans for this parking garage are going to come in and they're not going to build it for 2 or 3 years because they'll keep extending it. And you've got to think of the safety and what's going on, and the trucks can't get into a parking garage to save not car, but lives. So I think June 1st is too far out. I won't be supporting that. I don't know. I would be fine with it going to effect right now, immediately, or April 30th or whatever. But I think going out, they're just going to work the system and get by with it.
Mr. Chair.
And you're talking about safety.
Councilman, thank you for your comment. Yes, sir.
You know, most contractors follow changes to the building code. And I mean, they probably are aware that this is coming in 27, so maybe they were already planning on gaming the system anyways. So I think that I would be in support of delaying the adoption date. June 1st is recommended. In my mind, I was thinking 90 days, but I'm not a math guy. It's probably pretty close.
45.
I think that it's fair because people budget these projects long in advance, and you know this adds to the cost of that. Safety is important, which is why it seems like we'd be doing this. But I think that just from a project viability standpoint, it could ruin some people's if they had limited funds. Mm-hmm. So I think that we need to be fair to contractors and,
Absolutely. Putting you in a position, I understand that. So I do, and I think whatever timeline you come up with, at the end, we are improving safety.
Hey, listen, we signed up for this, right?
Yep.
This is what we do. We always face this. I think, board, we've heard comments. There's a motion on the floor.
Yep.
I'm going to make one additional comment, and it's more of, we're thinking certain ways, but, you can't put a price on life or safety. And we have been lucky up until this point, yes, that we have not had this in our city. Mm-hmm. So at that point, someone want to call.
Mr. Chairman, may I give him a comment? I know you said yours was going to be the last, but so I think what the June 1st date does, it doesn't allow people. I mean, nobody's going to get organized that fast. I don't think that's going to happen. I think what our sentiment is we want to kind of give everybody a heads up that this is coming, more of a heads up than they would have if we passed it for tomorrow. So it's the grace period we're giving is not, in my opinion, going to change a whole lot of thing, except it's just kind of a way of easing them into the decision, even though if they know it's coming in 2026.
Are you aware of any current projects?
No, I know Lawnwood had their pre-application, but other than that, I mean, if you have projects that are still at the site plan level, I mean, everyone knows that it takes a while to go through those development.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Right.
Yep.
Okay.
So, thank you.
Right. Okay. All right. We will take a vote on the motion that's on the floor that we extend this to June 1st, 2025 as the date of adoption. All in favor of that motion indicate by saying aye.
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 Opposed? Motion passes. Thank you very much. And Chief, Madam Attorney,
PA.
I think you've heard the sentiment of the board, and I think as we put together communications, it's going to be vital that we be joined at the hip, communication going out to our respective building departments. entities where we may be on boards, we definitely need a high presence between now and June. I think the mayor hit it right on the head. Nothing's going to change, but the optics would have been different if we hadn't moved this date out. So we give that time now to have this community conversation, let our phones blow up, our emails blow up, but we still have to move forward with safety and progress. So thank you.
And Mr. Chairman, yes, I would like to have a copy of this sent to me with a new date.
Yes. Oh, yes.
Absolutely.
Yes, please.
Yes, I will not sign it until it says June 1st.
Yeah.
Okay, very well.
Thank you.
Right. 2025, I assume.
2025, yes. Yes. All right, thank you. I didn't know that was going to be such a lively discussion. It just didn't come off that way, Chief Lee, when we talked. Okay, comments about it for our chief?
Well, that's what I was going to do. I'm going to apologize. I did not think it was going to be all that either. And I didn't know presentation was going to be that long, but I think it gives the board a good idea that we are busy. Mm-hmm. And I hope you guys see it all the time on what we work and keep it kind of like a duck in the water. Feet move really fast, but it looks nice and calm up front. So, I hope you enjoy the presentation. The last thing I want to talk about is thanks to Chief Michaels, his efforts. Commission on Fire Accreditation International approved our annual review.
So awesome.
We're good there. Oh, I do have one more thing, Mayor PSR Martin. We have a Chad GPT. So you just
Chad, yes. Oh, I'm well aware he's Chad GPT. Trust me.
So, actually, he and Chief Gonzalez just got back from the Fire Department Instructors Conference in Indianapolis. He actually teaches, and I think would you do a presentation there on AI?
Yes.
Yeah, so we have one of the premier people here. I consider myself a geek with the GPT. Yeah, geeks.
Well, I brought it up because when I was at the Smart Cities Expo last week, one of the presentations was on how the NYFD used AI and certain programs to modify all their systems to get up with technology, and it was such an interesting conversation. So then immediately, even though we're not NYFD, we're growing, we've got things, we got to use technology, we got to balance it out with staffing and all that. So I immediately started thinking of our fire district and how we're, planning and moving forward. So
AI is, I think, a daily conversation upstairs.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. All right, that's it, Chief. Comments from the clerk treasurer.
Yes, thank you. Just wanted to share that I recently completed my special district manager training, and I am now certified.
Congratulations. Oh, so, congratulations.
Thank you.
All right. Does that mean no salary increase? Hold it steady, right? Now, coming back, right? We got it locked in over there, right?
Okay. We have a contract.
All right. District attorney?
Nothing additional.
Okay. Board members, comments?
Mr. Chair, the only comment I got to make is based on the presentations today. I think I got to be a little nicer to Langle and a couple of these other guys. We approve all these things throughout the year, and you don't realize that sometimes they come as a totality. This is just how many projects are going on.
How are we going to pay for all these?
I
just want to thank Chief Lee for coming to the city of Fort Pierce and making the presentation. And it was very well received, and we appreciate it.
So, as we're looking at planning for the future and future fire stations, and all of us have a lot of development happening in our cities and in the county. And as these developers are coming in and looking at the fact that we are going to have such much larger costs, we have threats of what may happen with property tax revenue, right? And how we may be having to deal with certain implications financially in the future, it's all the more important that when these developers are coming in, that we push them as hard as we can get the most out of them, to make sure that they are paying for what they should be paying for, and so our taxpayers are not paying for it. And then our organizations don't suffer as a result of that. So one of the things I've been working on with some of the developers that are coming in, or the ones that want changes, want more residential, is I'm saying, well, if you want X, Y, and Z, you better give me a pad-ready site for my next for the next fire station that has to get built. So I'm not sure where we are in the planning process of our next three, but like for Astoria coming in, which is up here in the LTC Ranch area, they already had residential. They wanted 250 more units. I said I want a pad-ready site for the fire station for that space that, instead of just giving the land. So I'm just encouraging everyone, please, please, when you're having these conversations and negotiations, please make them pay for everything that they need to pay for a public benefit. Because when we're talking $8 million for a fire station, pad ready is $3 to $4 million, close to it, almost half. So if they're footing that bill, that takes a lot of off us. I know, and that is just today's cost. So we have to be prepared for that and more for the future as things continue to shift and change. And then going back to the tariff issue and how things affect us. So when I went to the Smart Cities Expo, I was with our IT director, and he already has orders going in to Dell for more computers because more staff are coming on and upgrades. And he already said that the cost has been affected by 20%. That's a lot. 20% on all the computer equipment, it's significant. So, you know, until things flush out, we're going to continue to see these things happen. And who knows, it'll happen over time. But we really need to push to make sure that we're getting everything we can out of them, out of the development community who want to be here, because they need us more than we need them at this point. We just have to watch our costs and make sure that they're paying. So thank you all. And I'm pushing them hard.
Oh.
So this morning I went to the networker breakfast, and I've noticed that Serge has sat through this entire meeting. You get another award, but he was awarded as the networker, the firefighter breakfast, whatever. Michelle, you explain it. But anyway, congratulations to Serge, and it was an honor to see you. The other thing, I did ride with Station 6, I don't know, 3 weeks ago, something like that. And they said that was a busy station.
It wasn't? Not the day you went?
They had three calls. And wait a minute. And three canceled calls. So every call I went on got canceled. We got to the end of the street and did a U-turn and came back. But it was a great meal.
There you go. You got fed.
It's all about the food. But so any station that's out there and is watching this, and if you would like me to come visit your station, if you're really, really busy, I've done it to Station 1, Station 6, so I'm available. But that is my goal, is to ride every single station in 579 days.
Oh, my God.
But thank you for that, and... that's all I have. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. I wasn't actually going to say anything, but I just piggyback since Mayor Martin brought up about development and share with you guys last week, or actually 2 weeks ago, we were up in Tallahassee, and myself, our County Administrator George Landry, EDC Wes McCurry, and Timberline met with the Department of Commerce Secretary Kelly. So once upon a time, Florida didn't think we could have data centers here. We didn't know if our grid was strong enough, had enough energy. Well, they've been looking, they've been watching, and it's determined we can support data centers in the state of Florida. So
that's a lot of electricity.
I will share with you that there are currently two companies looking to come into St. Lucie County, one of which is already doing a project up in Volusia County. It's a 1,200-acre site with the potential to bring in $1.4 billion, of which 90% will be right here in St. Lucie County. A couple of roadblocks, sales tax. There's a sunsetting sales tax in 27, so all that equipment inside every 2 to 3 years has to be replaced before it goes bad. So they're already up there lobbying, trying to get that extension. That'll be something that has to happen to allow this to move through. The other thing we've heard about, FPL's increase. So right now they could go to any states with data centers, Virginia, Texas, and get their power for about 6 to 8 cents all day long. With FPL's new increase, they're around 10 to 12. So they're working very, very hard, obviously, to try to negotiate that with FPL. But just figured I'd share with you, we have someone who is incredibly, incredibly interested, and they are looking at 1,200 acres on the northwest corner of Orange and Minute Maid. Last thing I'll throw in there is, while they're up there lobbying, they are all also working on preempting us.
Yep.
To make that decision. So, you know, it's, as is everything in our job, it's a double-edged sword, and you gotta walk the line. But obviously, they're good potential for us, good economic development, great way to add to the tax base. Obviously, I hate that it's outside of the USB and, you know, all the way out west. But from my understanding, once we do get a data center in, typically you get one of your Magnificent Seven, your Google, your Meta, your, we already kind of have Amazon, but Amazon in a different way, Tesla, talking about EVs. And that's one thing since, you know, I started campaigning is we need diversity. We need, where's my corporations, where are my IT jobs, where are my AI jobs? And so, again, good and bad, this will open the door to the type of economic development that I know also that you guys have been lobbying for down in Port St. Lucie, and I'm sure Fort Pierce as well. So,
yeah, we have a project in the hopper for a data center as well. There is a study that FPNL has to do in order to make sure that they can generate the power. And I just found out last week that all the paperwork was submitted to FPNL to start that study, and it's a 6-month study. So,
well, I know Marshall Critchfield already up in Tallahassee confirmed that they've got the power.
Okay, well, that's good.
For our area, anyway.
That's good.
So, yeah.
I guess it's a formality for this because
probably,
and the applicant has to pay for it.
Yes.
So,
yes.
So Fort Pierce Utilities Authority can do it.
Right.
Absolutely. Good.
Thank you for bringing that up. That poses a whole nother risk, right? When it comes to public safety, and I can only imagine data centers if something goes.
Are they going to have a garage?
A garage with probably a lot of electric vehicles, right?
I know it's 3.1 million square feet, yeah, so.
I was told that those are different data centers that are already under discussion, so
yeah, I've heard
don't
that
think
too.
That you have to stop them coming to get them in Port St. Louis. We can all have data centers.
Yeah. No, all of us together. At some point, there's probably going to have several in our entire county.
Yes.
It's going to be lousy water. With data.
Yeah. There's no water. Yes, we got to truck it out there. We supply water.
We got the water.
So,
yep.
Board, thank you for a great meeting today. We do for need sure. We have determination to excuse absence for 2025. I mean, for March.
Second, I don't know who was absent,
whatever,
but there you go.
It was two.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah. So we have moved and probably second the determination of excuse absence. All in favor indicate by saying
aye.
All right. Does anything else come before the board? We will have a motion to stand adjourned.
No move.
All right. We are adjourned.
That's another thing that needs to come off. We don't even do that.
Excuse me.
No. We don't do that. We need to change that here. Nobody. I don't even know why we need to do that.
You know what? When you were talking about developers, they got that House Bill in 943.